In the early hours of the morning on May 17, 1981, a prominent woman from Van Buren, Arkansas, was bludgeoned to death in her mansion. Ruiann Park was the divorced wife of newspaper magnate and the mother of a son and an adopted daughter. She was hit 10 times over the head, dragged by her ankles into the den, struggling. There was no evidence of a break-in. I'm Dee Morales, and this is A Mother of a Murder. The homicide report by the police said she'd been dragged 30 feet from that bedroom into the hallway. There was evidence of a struggle. She grabbed at books in the bookcases as she was pulled forcibly into the den. Ruiann Park fought until the bitter end. Prosecuting attorney Ron Field.
The body was found in a fairly unique posture. It was if someone had laid her out like a funeral home. I mean, she was, usually you see bodies and they're disabled. The clothing's all scattered in disarray. Limbs are all askew. In this case, she was laid out very, very neatly. clothing all tucked in. And apparently she had died from what we thought at the time were head wounds, which in fact turned out to be true based on the autopsy that stated that she'd been hit with a blunt instrument numerous times in the head, causing brain damage.
Ruiann's son, attorney Sam Hugh, discovered his mother's body the next day. Author Anita Paddock wrote a book on the murder.
He woke up, looked out his window, saw his mother's newspaper was still lying in the yard where she demanded that it be thrown. And he thought, well, that was strange because she was... She always read her newspaper. And so he looked again around 1 o'clock, 12:45, something like that, and the newspaper was still there. So he called his mother, and she didn't answer the phone. So that alarmed him. And so there were three people who had keys to that house. He had a key. His sister had a key, and Ruiann had a key. And his key to the house was he kept on the kitchen cabinet. So he took that key, and he went over and unlocked the door, went in the house, and he told friends later, that that house felt real cold. And it was May. This was May the 18th, and the house shouldn't have been cold. But he went in and he said it felt real cold, and he went through the house. He said, "Mother, Mother." And he thought for a moment, well, maybe she fell downstairs. There was a basement and a stairway close to the kitchen. And so, you know, looked down there, didn't see anything. Then he went on into the den, and that's where he found his mother's body. And she was lying on her stomach, and she was in a pink nylon gown and a pink nylon robe, and she had no underwear on. She was 75. She had 30 pin curls in her hair. She still rolled her hair up with pin curls. And so the autopsy report says they took out 30 bobby pins. She had 30 pin curls up there. And now she fought with whoever killed her. She fought because she broke a finger on her hand. She had a big cut on her other hand. She had a long black hair that was clutched between her fingers. And so she fought hard. She had been killed in a guest room bed and drug into the den. And there was blood in the guest room bed, and that bed hadn't been made up. It was a bed that you could see the mattress, and then she was drug in, and then there was a quilt or something like that thrown over her, and there was a pool of blood underneath her head.
Was there a murder weapon on site?
No, there was no murder weapon, but she had been hit, according to the autopsy report. She had been hit on her top of her head, So that meant somebody was having to stand over her 12 times with a blunt object. And you'd have had to have been hit pretty hard. And she was fighting, too. I was surprised. I remembered her as sort of a large woman, but the autopsy said she only weighed 145 pounds, and that's not really a big woman at all. So she had probably, as she got older, had lost weight, maybe. But I hadn't really seen her since my high school days. And so this happened when I was 40 years old.
So what did Sam Hugh found his mother, the mother that, you know, sometimes got on his nerves, but nevertheless his mother, what did he do then?
Well, he called the police. He used the phone that was in the kitchen. He called the police, and then he went outside, and then he cried and waited for the police to come.
The way that I became acquainted with the case was that my understanding from the police was that Sam Hugh Park had called them one morning and said that he thought something had happened to his mother. And the police had responded to the house she lived in, the mansion. Rui Ann Park was very paranoid, I would say. She feared break-ins and burglaries. She knew that she had a reputation as being an elderly woman that lived alone. Sam lived a short distance from her, not next door or anything. She didn't have anybody next door, but down the hill, so to speak. And Sam, at that time, had a lot of disreputable characters hanging around his house. So I think that based on a lot of those concerns, she had fortified her house. She had iron bars welded across the windows. She had door locks that were double deadbolt. You had to have a key to get in or out so that they couldn't be jimmied. To our knowledge, there was only two keys. Sam told the police that she had one and he had one. Her key was found with her. Sam used his to unlock the door to let the police in. The house would not have passed any type of fire code because of the welded bars on the windows and all. But when the police got there, and I also checked, there were no signs of forced entry. I mean, it would have taken a bulldozer to get in, and there was no signs of anything like that.
Sam Hugh's good friends, Rusty Meyer and his wife, Linda, just happened to be driving by. Rusty had been friends with Sam Hugh since high school.
And there was police tape out front. And I saw that the mayor of Van Buren, Gene Bell, was standing there at the tape barricading the driveway. And so we drove up there, up the driveway and up to where the place was, where it was taped off, the home, the driveway into the home. And I asked Mayor Bell, I said, well, what's going on? He says, well, I really can't tell you much about it. He said, I can't say, you know, but we're not allowing anybody in. And we learned very shortly thereafter that Mrs. Park had been murdered, which was, of course, quite a shock for everybody. We went to the house later after the police had released it and opened it back up, which amazingly was kind of a short period of time after the murder, actually. And Sam was there and Linda, Sam's sister, was there as well. She had traveled from Cabot, where they lived, to there. So we were there in the center of the house, Sam and my wife and Linda. And there could have been a couple of others, but just a very few of us. And my wife, I mean, it was this Mrs. Park's blood in the center of the living room on that beautiful cherry wood floor that was still there, even though, of course, Mrs. Park's body had been removed. And my wife didn't want Linda to have to clean that up, but clearly somebody needed to. So she cleaned it up, you know, as very, a very thoughtful act on her part, but So she did that. She took care of that.
The police immediately began focusing on her only son, Sam. Her adopted daughter lived 2 hours away with her family. Sam Hugh lived a few houses away.
Sam at the time was not liked. He was not liked for a number of reasons. He wasn't liked by the police because of being a defense attorney and representing a lot of people that they felt like shouldn't have gotten representation. He wasn't liked because he was gay. He wasn't liked because he was an alcoholic. He wasn't liked by Ruby Ann Park's friends because they thought that he was a bad son. There had been several incidents prior to this that the police gleefully reported. For example, about a week or so before the murder, Sam had gone into a hairdressing salon that his mother was at getting treatment and had demanded money and made the comment, you know, you should give me some of my inheritance now, and I just wish you'd just go ahead and die so I could hurry up and get my money. You know, for all of those reasons, the police immediately zeroed in on Sam. He was the only suspect. And I would say within a couple of hours came and asked for a murder one warrant on him.
So what did you say?
I said no. You know, it's difficult to articulate exactly why, but I wanted more investigation. There are times when it's appropriate for the police to zero in on one person. You catch somebody over a body with a smoking gun and you know, the guy, the victim's wrote in blood, you know, John Doe just shot me. But I worried about this case because Sam had no alibi. And I know that sounds funny, but his alibi, when the police talked to him, was, gee, I got drinking last night about 8 o'clock, and I passed out drunk, and I just woke up this morning about 7:30 and went straight to Mom's and found her. The fact that there was no forced entry, the fact that there was only two keys and Sam had one and she had the other, the fact that she was known to not let strangers in her house at all, period. No one could get in. The fact that the doors were so heavily bolted, the fact that he had no alibi, the fact that he had been wanting money. And there was a comment made in one of the incidents leading up to it about a Persian rug. And he had indicated that, gee, I want $5,000 and that damn rug that you've got in front of the fireplace is worth a lot more than that. And it looked like at one point the body had been allowed to deliberately bleed on that rug to run it.
Well, the first court of opinion was, I guess, certainly the public opinion, because it was the law enforcement officers that began their investigation. And I use that term loosely because they botched it from the get-go.
Let me just interrupt for a minute. How did they botch it?
They were fixated on it, pinning it on Sam. They clearly had it in their minds that Sam was guilty of the murder. Now, keep in mind, you know, he lived very close. They lived very close. I mean, he was certainly had, I guess you might say, the opportunity. But I'm not sure that they. In fact, I'm pretty sure that their investigation centered around not trying to find who the guilty person was, but to find witnesses and others and perhaps evidence that might support their theory, which is pretty much a conclusion with them at that time, that Sam actually had murdered his mother. And there was no sign of, in some respect, there was no sign of a break-in, no sign of forced entry. Nothing was stolen from the property. So it didn't look like a situation where somebody had broken into the house and then got caught in the act and murdered Mrs. Park. And so it kind of looked like it was somebody that perhaps could gain entry without forcing entry.
The police did a piss poor job of of doing what they should have. It was a rush to judgment. The long, the black strand of hair, Sam didn't have black hair. They never, you know, there was a fingerprint print and a handprint on a refrigerator, and they never, they didn't take any prints of that. They just were sure that Sam did it, and so actually they just took a break. They just didn't work that hard.
Do you think this was, a lot of this was because of the prejudice, because he was gay?
Oh, of course. Of course. He was gay. He was very, the older he got, the more flagrantly gay he was. He had a lot of loud parties with gay friends. People knew it. They'd drive by and say, oh, he's having a big party, and isn't that terrible? And lots of talk around town. My mother was alive, and I can remember, and she lived in Van Buren. I remember mother and her friends talking on the telephone about, oh, that Sam Hugh Park. They just knew that he did it. He was gay, and he was a drunk, and he probably smoked pot, and, you know, they just were sure that he was the guy who did it.
Keep in mind, this was 1981 in a small town in Arkansas. Everyone knew each other, and everyone had an opinion. Everyone was quick to pass judgment. P.D. Duval has grown up in this town and still lives here.
Pretty much everybody in town decided that Sam Hugh was the perpetrator of the murder. There was absolutely no physical evidence, no circumstantial evidence, no evidence of any kind. But Anita and I read every police report of every interview with everybody that the police contacted. And every one of the police reports that we read, all the police were interested in was Sam Hugh. Every witness was, leading. They led the witness toward, they even asked some of them point blank, do you think that Sam Hugh murdered his mother? It went that far. And they never looked for anybody else. They made up their mind from the get-go.
According to the police report of the interview with Sam Hugh, Sam said he had seen his mother the night before at about 4:30 p.m. He said he went to Rusty and Linda's house for dinner and left early to watch a movie. He said the last time he talked to his mother was after he watched it.
He called his sister Linda, who was in Cabot, and told her what had happened. And she cried, and then she and her husband made arrangements to leave there. By that time, they had three children, and the youngest boy was about, I guess, two. And so they made arrangements to leave them with a sitter, and they drove from Cabot to Van Buren. Everybody, the police, the town folks, everybody thought Sam Hugh had killed his mother. And he was harassed and harassed and harassed about it. And everybody did. A very few people, close friends of his, didn't think so. And they tried to be supportive of him, I'm sure. But everybody thought so.
How did someone kill Rui Ann when that house was practically a fortress? Did Sam Hugh kill his mother? Were there any more clues uncovered? Did Rui Ann have other enemies? Coming up, we'll take a look at a family with a lot of secrets and a town with a lot of prejudice. I'm Dee Morales with A Mother of a Murder. I'd like to express my thanks and give special credit to Caleb Haldane for recording and producing this episode. Original music by Robert Houston. Special thanks to the Miller Branch of the Fort Smith Library.